Now, a black hole around 23 times the mass of the Sun has swallowed a mysterious, much smaller astrophysical object. This cosmic gulp set off a train of gravitational waves that were detected on Earth. Scientists at the Australian National University are part of the team announcing this discovery. Joining us up by telephone from Canberra is Professor Susan Scott. Welcome to the Space Show, Susan.
Good evening.
Could you tell us what ANU's role has been in this discovery?
Well, ANU plays a variety of roles in gravitational wave detection and gravitational wave analysis. We're involved in building and designing parts of the interferometers which actually detect the gravitational waves. We're also involved in analysing the data that the interferometers produce, and we look for certain kinds of signals. We develop algorithms for looking for particular types of gravitational wave signals. But also we're involved in electromagnetic follow-up of gravitational wave detections. And for this particular event, we were using the ANU SkyMapper Optical Transient Telescope to search the region of sky given to us by the gravitational wave detection to actually look for a counterpart to the gravitational wave detection that we had.
And what is SkyMapper?
It's an optical transient telescope that basically does quite a lot of, you know, supernova surveys of the southern sky, but, you know, it can be used very well for gravitational wave detection to actually search for counterparts for the gravitational waves. And this was done beautifully for our first ever detection of a binary neutron star system merging, where SkyMapper actually imaged the source and developed a temperature profile of the kilonova that was produced by the collision.
Now, in the public imagination, a black hole is a sort of celestial vacuum cleaner, sucking up everything that comes too close. Now, this new finding can only enhance that perception.
Exactly right, and we'd been sort of hoping to have one of these type of detections for a very long time, namely a possible black hole colliding with a neutron star. Now, this particular system, we have a very ambiguous, what we call secondary mass, the smaller one, because it's at 2.6 solar masses, and that puts it kind of awkwardly right in what we call the lower mass gap region, which is, we know that we've have neutron stars up to about 2.5 solar masses and black holes down to about 5 solar masses. But through electromagnetic observations and also now gravitational wave detections of binary black hole systems, we're beginning to probe this mass gap region, and this secondary mass in our new detection actually falls slap bang in this mass gap. It's just above 2.5, it's about 2.6 solar masses. So we have an ambiguity as to actually what sort of thing it is. Is it a very light black hole or is it a very heavy neutron star?
Now, how can you measure these masses so far out in space?
Well, we use templates, and we can actually estimate the masses and the distances using template system for our gravitational wave signals. And so we can get a reasonably accurate measure of the component masses of the two bodies.
And how far away is this black hole?
This particular system is at about 240 megaparsecs, which is about 780 million light years. So that puts it at about 6 times the distance of the binary neutron star merger we detected in August 2017.
So it's well and truly in someone else's galaxy.
Yes, well, and the difficulty of this situation was that, you know, you might expect in certain situations when a black hole collides with a neutron star to actually get electromagnetic signals emanated from the neutron star being ripped apart as it's swallowed up, as you said, by the black hole. But because of the extra distance for this particular event, and because of the, this is the most asymmetric, as we call it, event that we've detected so far, in that the larger black hole is 9 times approximately the mass of the smaller object. Now, even if the smaller object was a neutron star, because of that larger symmetry, it would have been swallowed kind of whole like Pac-Man, instead of being shredded if it had been, you know, the two masses had been much closer in, closer together, so to speak. So in any case, we can't tell by the lack of electromagnetic signal exactly what this system was, because it's consistent with either two black holes or a black hole and a neutron star.
Yeah, well, as we've mentioned, it's only 3 years ago that we here on the Space Show were able to report the first detection of a gravitational wave by LIGO and Virgo. So how many gravitational waves have been detected since?
Well, we have over 50 detections. We haven't announced all of them as yet, but, you know, we've produced a catalogue from our first two observing runs. And we only have one binary neutron star collision, and the other ones we've announced have all been binary black hole collisions. But the fascinating thing is that through all our detections, we're actually finding new things with each detection. You know, we previously didn't have a very good idea of what the population in the universe of various black hole sizes was. And certainly we'd never seen a binary neutron star system colliding, so we weren't exactly sure of what the processes involved in that were, and now we have already a much better idea. But even we had a second binary neutron star collision announced a bit earlier this year, which was from Anzac Day last year, and that the combined masses of that binary system are beyond anything that we're aware of from, say, galactic binary neutron star systems. It's heavier, and that already raises questions as to, you know, how it formed, why haven't we seen them otherwise, and things like that. So we're also learning about, you know, how black holes get together, their formation channels, in what sort of systems do they form, you know, sort of could it be, you know, globular clusters or in galactic nuclei, disks around galactic nuclei, or in isolation. We're gaining more and more information from every detection. One thing I can also say about this particular detection that we've learnt very well is that we're always sort of testing Einstein's theory of gravity against our detection. And it's so far stood up incredibly well. And when we made our first detection, that was really the first test of his theory in a very strong gravity regime. You know, previously we've just made weak gravity regime detections, you know, using our solar system and so on. So that was the very first big test, and I guess we weren't entirely sure how well it would stand up. But this particular detection, because of the very different size masses, we actually get higher multiple elements to the radiation, which also test Einstein's theory, and we did discern these higher multiple moments, and that is another confirmation of his theory. So there's all kinds of other aspects that come into these detections, in that a lot of them are based on a particular theory from 100 years ago, and we keep probing it with more and more detections. And, you know, one day we may find a deviation, but we haven't done so as yet.
I sometimes wonder which would excite scientists the most, either confirming that Einstein was right after all, or finding some hole in his theory and having to develop a new theory.
Well, it would have been an incredibly deflating experience if Einstein's theory had totally been, you know, incorrect in the strong gravity regime, because we would have built these massive, very expensive detectors on the premise that it was correct, and it could have been a flop at that moment. So it's very pleasing in a way that it stands up at least at that level. But obviously, we do know it does eventually break down. We need a theory of quantum gravity, for instance, which we don't have at present, to describe certain extreme environments, like at the center of black holes and things like that. But that's why we need to keep on probing the theory, and that's what our detections are doing.
And how many stations are operating now in the LIGO and Virgo networks?
We currently have three detectors fully operational, which is the two LIGO detectors in the United States, in Hanford and Livingston, and one detector in Italy, a European detector called Virgo. But the Japanese are also have a detector which is being commissioned and partly operational, and we expect it to be fully joining our observations in due course. We're not having an observing run at the moment. We're in between runs. But when we have our fourth observing run, we do expect KAGRA, the Japanese instrument, to be taking part in that run.
And finally, are you looking forward towards LISA, the European Space Agency's satellite gravitational detector?
I'm personally tremendously looking forward to it. It helps to complete our coverage of the gravitational wave spectrum. And, you know, whether it would go ahead or not was a bit iffy for a long time. But I think with the ground-based detection of gravitational waves, that really helped the case for the mission, a lot. And as I said, it will complement, our part of the gravitational wave spectrum with different types of observations of gravitational waves, like from supermassive black holes colliding and so on. So I think, I'm very, very excited about that, and the whole community is very excited.
Well, thank you, Susan, for joining us on the Space Show. We're talking with Professor Susan Scott from the Research School of Physics at the Australian National University.
Thank you.